First Person Advisors is now a subsidiary of NFP, the fifth largest insurance broker in the world, combining local expertise with access to global capabilities and solutions. Learn more at firstpersonadvisors.com.
Larry Bird off the backboard.
That is Larry Bird. He's been all of it. He's shooting over zone again.
Side to score.
Albert, they lost their concentration. Bird goes up.
Larry Bird helped put Indiana State University on the map back in the late 70s. Now Deborah Curtis is dialing up her game plan. A lifelong educator with a clear vision on how to push one of Terre Haute's biggest treasures into the future.
This is a place just so full of opportunity for everyone. And the way we serve the state of Indiana, they're tied to me. They are the key pieces that really tap a passion for me, and I really believe for my other colleagues here on campus as well. And we see it in our students as they go out as alumni.
She is the 12th president of Indiana State University, the first woman and only the second alum to lead the school. Get to know Deborah Curtis on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast. Hello and welcome to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. I'm Gary Dick. When Deborah Curtis took the job as president of Indiana State University nearly 4 years ago, she was returning home to her Sycamore roots in a sense. She earned her PhD in curriculum and instruction at ISU. Before that, Curtis followed her passion for music, graduating with a bachelor's from McMurray College and a master's from the University of Illinois, both degrees in music education. Deborah and her husband, Lynn, have swapped plenty of classroom stories over the years. Lynn spent some four decades as a teacher, coach, athletic director, principal, and superintendent. Deborah's last stop before Indiana State, she served as provost and chief learning officer at the University of Central Missouri. And I'm very pleased to welcome Indiana State University President Deborah Curtis to the podcast. President Curtis, really a pleasure. I hope you're doing well.
We're doing very well in Terre Haute. Gary, thanks for having me.
Of course, and I should mention, full disclosure, I'm an Indiana State University graduate, a proud graduate as well. So looking forward to this conversation. Deborah, as I said, you're certainly not a stranger to Indiana State. You earned a degree there, a PhD at Indiana State. Was it, in a sense, coming back home?
It was very truly coming back home. You know, as you might imagine, it's been several decades since that took place when I graduated, and returning back, my husband and I several times said, full circle, and who would have thought, but it's a real honor and a privilege to come back in this capacity.
When you came back, maybe for the interviews and that kind of thing, because certainly Indiana State has changed since I've been there dramatically. I mean, did you get that feeling too, how much the school had changed physically from the time you were a student there?
Absolutely. I said to so many people when I came back, because of course, with busy careers, sometimes it happens. I hadn't been back since I graduated. So that was, as I said, several decades. And I know at the time, the president who signed my degree was President Landini, and he had established a vision for this campus. What I came to learn upon return was that each president after Landini maintained a fidelity to that plan. And I loved Indiana State. In my memory, it was a rather urban campus with streets running through everywhere. And I came back and saw this gorgeous park-like setting, and I was just blown away at its transformation. Many familiar things, as you've seen, but many brand new, beautiful park-like experiences here on campus.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say so. So Dick Landini, who is a very high profile, well-known president. So it was really a lot of his vision is kind of, coming to life in these recent improvements.
Oh, absolutely. He was the mastermind of that campus plan. And as I referred to, the presidents following him, Moore and then Benjamin and then Bradley and now my opportunity, really leaned in to to that plan and said that this was so well done at the time, this deserves continued emphasis. And everyone's added their touch to it since then. And it's just lovely. I'm delighted to be here at this time because one of the things that I've noticed about that plan too, Indiana State does a great job of retaining well-built historic buildings, but totally revamping the inside. And thank you, State of Indiana, for the support the legislature gives us in being able to do that. So renovations have abounded here, and it's wonderful.
Yeah. Do you think that that is a story that's lost on people outside of Terre Haute, maybe, and more broadly? I know it's an issue that you have, and I would tend to agree with it, that Indiana State doesn't get its due. I mean, it doesn't get the attention, perhaps, that it deserves.
Well, one of my missions, as I've shared since I've been back, is as president, it's my mission to dispel the language. Indiana State University is one of the best kept secrets in the state, not while I'm president. So I'm engaging all my colleagues around the state as well, because not only that physical transformation, but this comprehensive institution that's grown up around that original normal school more than 150 years ago is something that's not quite understood around the state. So we're out aggressively trying to share that message and our mission. You know, most of our students come from Indiana. Most of our students stay here. Different mission than some of our big cousins in the state who import talent. And that's great. We develop the talent in Indiana. And I like to tell the governor we fill the middle class.
Yeah, that's good. Well, and talk about that, because I know you feel strongly that Indiana State serves a very important piece of this whole workforce equation, if you will, the challenge facing the state of Indiana to attract and keep talent here. And you really feel strongly that ISU is a big contributor to the pipeline.
We certainly are. And I often say with our name, Indiana State is the state of Indiana's university, because we do draw most of our student population from the state. And our description of our student population is not something we've come across recently. This is who we've been. And what caught my passion as a doctoral student, about half of our students are first generation college goers, first in their family. About a similar number, about half, are from low income families. And this is an absolute rocket for some of those people into a new social status level. As a matter of fact, Indiana State is the number one institution in the state of Indiana on impacting the social mobility of our graduates. We're in the top 11% nationally, and I don't think many people understand that. It's not who we happen to be, it's who we're passionate about serving, and we are set up to serve that population. With that said, though, I'll tell you that other half, you know, we've got a growing over 1,000 students in our honors college. So we are a campus of choice for many students who are looking for that world-class faculty experience as an undergrad, working shoulder to shoulder with PhDs in labs and on study trips that you don't always get at a Research One institution. So it's a very unique role.
Describe Indiana State University. You know, all universities kind of have a niche or a place in the state of Indiana. As you look at the programs, the offerings, everything that Indiana State brings to the table, describe Indiana State University for those who know the name, but maybe not what the university is all about.
Well, I'll say two things about that. One of them is that we focus sharply on the workforce needs of the state of Indiana. So state of Indiana has a website with these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 flames for most needed fields. We pay attention to that, and we make sure that we are resourcing and making available programs in those 3, 4, and 5 flame needs for the state of Indiana. So you may look at some of our higher enrolled programs and you'll see it's not by accident that they're related to the workforce needs. The second piece I would say about that is there are many folks who don't understand we have some unique programs. I call us rather applied professional programs that aren't anywhere else in the state. The one I love to talk about is package engineering technology. Yeah. We're the only one in the state of Indiana. Somebody's got to use the technology, latest technology, design all that packaging that Amazon has to send your treasures to you in. And we've got not only the only program in Indiana, but the one of very few nationwide. So we've been drawing some external outside the state of Indiana attention from, for example, software providers with in-kind gifts to give us the latest technology for our students to use. So when they graduate, they know how to use those latest pieces. And those are examples that not many people understand we have. We're probably the largest preparer in the state of graduates in the area of criminology. So we have police officers, chiefs all over the state of Indiana, and frankly, the Midwest, who are Indiana State grads. And that often goes unnoticed because they don't exactly walk around with this lapel pin I wish they'd wear, but it's not part of the uniform. But I like to get out and share with mayors and policymakers in different regions of the state how many, many Indiana State graduates they employ.
How about higher education in your view? I'd be interested in your take on it because these are certainly challenging times across the board for universities of all shapes and sizes. And the pandemic certainly has added greatly to that. How would you assess where higher education is now and where it's going? I mean, as you look at higher education, maybe in 10 years or 15 years, is going to be much different perhaps than what it is today?
So I'll say a couple pieces to that. There are some pundits out there now as we try to emerge from the pandemic who are suggesting higher ed's turned on its ear. I don't really think it will be that dramatic. And here's why I say that. As we've seen our students return more to face-to-face here, especially undergraduates, they want and they need that face-to-face experience. For the traditional 18 to 21, 22-year-old in undergrad, higher ed is more than the knowledge and content and skills they develop in a classroom, but it's a lot of the other outside of classroom experiences like experiential learning, you know, field lab work, community engagement that develops them into the future leaders you're not going to get online. So that's one thing. And we've seen it very, very clearly from our students coming back. The second thing I'd say is we will not be in higher ed writ large the same environment we were the fall of 19. None of us will return to exactly that. So what I mean by that is two things for Indiana State specifically. One, we're going to be pushing out more and more opportunities online for people who are place bound because we've learned not everyone's going to get in car and drive to Terre Haute to access what we have. But what we have is valuable for the state of Indiana, in many ways unique. So there'll be a little bit more emphasis on pushing that out, especially to the adult learners out there and career changers. That's one piece. A second piece as well is this alignment with what the needs are of the state. Yeah, I engage as much as I can at the state level with the Indiana Chamber and Indiana Commission for Higher Ed and track where we're headed as a state. And higher ed and business, manufacturing, employers, we need to partner up. There's so much potential in Indiana to attract the kind of economic development we need, but it's only going to come when we partner up and are able to message and communicate what rich resources and particularly talent development we have here. You know, I referenced to some of our larger cousins in the state bring in a lot of talent. Some of the rest of us develop our own talent here, and it's almost like a two-prong approach. If we can have that third piece with the employer saying, yeah, we want them on our work floors as they're earning whatever degrees, undergraduate, graduate degrees, so that when they graduate, you've got this really high-quality talent pool.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone would agree that over the years, there's been a disconnect between business and academia, and not just in Indiana, but certainly here in other places. Business says, hey, the colleges and universities aren't giving us the kinds of students we need and back and forth. Do you think that's beginning to change a little bit here in Indiana? And there is more of that working relationship between business and academia?
I think it's not only beginning to change, there are a few bright spots here and there where you see, frankly, a greater commitment outside of the academy to welcoming students within the academy into what we call experiential learning opportunities. I often say to employers, I can't recreate your work floor on my campus. What I can do is give them a great foundation to join your workforce. How about we partner up together and do both? And at that graduation time, be it undergraduate, MBAs, whatever it might be, you've got a not only knowledgeable, but an experienced graduate who also has developed what I call those personal professional skills that so many employers want from college graduates. Are they problem solvers? Can they engage not only in leading when it's appropriate, but following when it's appropriate? Do they have a strong work ethic? Can they communicate well? I believe it's a combination of the workplace and the campus that will create that really fine talent pool that should attract more economic development to the state, because it's all here.
Yeah. And more locally there in the Wabash Valley, talk about your thoughts regarding Indiana State University and ISU as an economic engine. Obviously, you employ a lot of people. There's huge economic impact for the university and its operations. But in terms of what it can provide, you know, the talent it you know, produces and goes into area companies. But are there things that are being done to really help economic development specifically in the Wabash Valley?
Well, certainly the work that's gone in recent months into preparing for the READY grants from the state of Indiana has brought together many partners throughout this region that focus on not just quality of life, but quality of place, to be able to attract more economic development, but actually grow what's here. It's not one or the other. It's bring some in, but it's also grow what's here. Indiana State takes great pride in being able to be a part of that. But what I love for people to know is the Wabash Valley is rich in higher ed opportunity. We have four higher ed institutions here. Most other communities I've lived in, even larger ones than this, maybe had two. With a stretch with a community college partner, three, we've got four, and they're all quite unique, which means you've got everything for anybody, what they're interested in. Beautiful St. Mary of the Woods, a faith-based private smaller institution. Rose Holman, award-winning engineering program known nationally. You've got Indiana State University, this substantial, not only economic engine here, but also in the development of our campus, providing a lot of work and a lot of resources here. Then, of course, one of the most lively Ivy Tech campuses. And I'm happy to tell you today, the presidents of all four of those work really well together and engage with the leadership in this community, especially on our visioning for the Wabash Valley, say, how can we all do what we do best and enhance that ability for this community to enhance its place in the state of Indiana?
Has that been, do you think, and I know you've just been there as president just a few years, but I have always kind of looked at that as a missed opportunity in the Wabash Valley, having all that academic firepower in the region. As you say, most cities, larger cities would kill to have that kind of presence of higher education. But over the years, it doesn't seem as though there has been the leveraging of that. It sounds like maybe it's happening now. And your take on that?
I truly believe it is. And if not now, when? If not now, shame on all of us sitting in our roles right here, because this is, you know, I reference those READY grants, but just the regional development work that's going on. And we all know from those earlier grants, some regions got at it quicker and better than others. But the Wabash Valley in this region has really taken up that mantle. And at whatever level the state is willing to support what we're doing, I think it's only the beginning of some of the pieces that we're going to be doing as a region beyond just the city of Terre Haute or Vigo County, but, you know, our seven county partners here and lifting up the not only the awareness, but the opportunity. Here we sit at this crossroads, 70 running right through here. We're on the right side of the Indy area for the airport. We have a little reach over into East Central Illinois, where we're the big game. You know, Terre Haute in this region is really a go-to for that area. I think it's just begun, and I really believe the energy and the enthusiasm and, frankly, the collaboration is here right now.
We'll have much more with Indiana State University President Deborah Curtis when we return on the Business and Beyond podcast. Stay with us.
First Person Advisors is now a subsidiary of National Financial Partners, the fifth largest insurance broker and consultant in the world. develop your total reward strategies all in one place with the combination of First Person's local expertise and NFP's global resources and integrated solutions. Learn more at firstpersonadvisors.com.
Welcome back to the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. My guest this week, Indiana State University's 12th president, Dr. Deborah Curtis. And President Curtis, I know we began the podcast with a little clip from the Larry Bird days. I happened to be at ISU. I was really fortunate to be there at that time because it was an amazing time. I'm curious, the impact that Larry Bird still has all these years later, I'm sure there's still some impact from his presence on the ISU campus.
Oh, of course there is. And of course, we're delighted to now have ensconced outside of the Holman Center the wonderful Larry Bird statue, which is really a drawing point for many people when they visit Terre Haute. But I can't go out of the state anywhere as president of Indiana State where I say then they go, Larry Bird. Yeah. Larry Bird. And that's a wonderful tradition for us. We were really delighted to see Larry use his Indiana State University jersey in some of his recent commercials in the last year as well, because it really speaks to his belief in that root connection for him to Terre Haute and Indiana State. So it's enormous, that awareness.
Hey, you mentioned Holman Center, and I know it has undergone a dramatic renovation, would maybe not be do it justice. Talk about that and what that means. There's a convention center in the works there in Terre Haute, but talk about what that means and that campus connection to downtown Terre Haute.
It's very true. So we just reopened during the pandemic, unfortunately, a $50 million renovation of Holman Center that really substantially hadn't been touched in a long time since the 70s. So I teased folks saying it was being held together with baling wire and chewing gum, but everything is new and fresh in there. One of my big thrills, may not be to others, is all the seats are blue now, which they weren't before. So I'm very excited about that. We certainly did a tremendous amount of mechanicals and HVAC work in there, which is in great need of, but some aesthetics as well, a beautiful glass atrium front to the south entrance, now right next to that Larry Bird statue. A beautiful hospitality suite has now been set in place and will entertain guests a great deal. But here's my favorite piece, because you know, we opened up last year with only teams playing in there and no fans. We've been able to welcome fans in, and two big things. The one piece that I call the cherry on the sundae that was missing was we hadn't built into that plan to replace the 90 scoreboard, which is a behemoth of a thing suspended from the ceiling. And now with the advancements in technology, you know, we're able to probably by next summer, you know, of course, we got to wait for it to come, buy a gift from and catch this, because this is really significant. The Holman George family have given us a $2 million gift to replace that with LED technology. Now, it's not only going to be almost twice as big, but it's lighter. Because that was one of the biggest problems, is will it be able to sustain that? Well, actually, it's going to be able to sustain that weight better than what was there before. So to me, that's the icing on the cake. And we opened this season with Tony George and a couple of his sisters and, as a matter of fact, a grandchild in attendance as well, which he was the grandchild when his grandfather was there at the dedication to begin with of the Holman Center. So beautiful bookends to that commitment from that family that still continues today. So it's very exciting.
That is exciting. And I'll have you know, much has changed since I played in sectional basketball games there, including when Clinton High School upset Terre Haute North, which was a big deal back in the day. So fond memories of Holman Center, to be sure. Well, let's talk about Deborah Curtis, the early days. You grew up in Chicago, right? Tell me about childhood and what it was like growing up in Chicago.
Well, you know, my parents, let me say that about them, because we just had Veterans Day, and that's the one time of year I get to lift them up. They met in the Army. Dad was from New York, young man from New York, and mom from the city of Chicago. So they located in Chicago, and we were Southsiders. I love when I welcome some of our students from Chicago to grab those Southsiders, even though we're Cup fans. We were Southsiders.
Oh, Southsiders and a Cup. Okay.
Yeah, that's a little scary, and that I have to attribute that to my husband. And then about middle school time, moved us out to the Burbs, which was a fledgling O'Hare Airport area, you know, where you could actually drive up to Terminal and watch the planes land, you know, in those days, right? Yeah. Nothing but cornfields around that area. area, blank land where now Woodfield Mall is, and got a chance to work at Marshall Fields there. Don't get me started on that topic, but it was a wonderful time of growth in the Chicago area, especially that suburban growth. Three of our five kids are now located in that area, so we get back there quite a bit. And it was, you know, when you're in the Chicago, what I call a bit of a bubble, you don't learn much about the rest of the state. So being able to go to McMurray College in Jacksonville, Illinois, southwest of Springfield, was a culture shock for me. And this Chicago kid, pretty much urban and suburban upbringing, went to the small town environment in this small private college. But it was the best thing that could have happened to me, because you get to see, you know, a variety of experiences. Off to the University of Illinois for graduate school in Champaign, which was the total opposite spectrum of that undergrad experience. But coming to Indiana State for this PhD was where I really caught my passion for the mission of an institution like this. Remember, I'd had the small private, I had the large research one. This comprehensive regional institution experience really grabbed me and said, this is where I feel fulfilled. So went off to Illinois State for 26 years as a faculty member, eventually dean, saying that's it, right? And said, well, this provost thing's kind of cool. So off we went, because kids were raising. My husband had just retired. Off we went to Warrensburg, Missouri, just outside of Kansas City, University of Central Missouri, saying, that's it. That's it. Until the call came one day. Search for, well, you need to look at this president. He said, I told you I'm good. I love being a provost. He said, well, it's Indiana State. I said, ooh, well, I got to think about that. He said, I graduated from there. He said, yeah, I know you did. Of course, they do their homework. And as soon as I said to my husband, he said, you got to. Who gets to do that? And I've got to tell you, Gary, it's the thrill of a career to come back to the place that gave you your start. And it's service for me to be able to lead in a couple of ways that I really thought after those 35 years I could bring back to this institution.
Yeah. And really, as you say, really coming back to a place where you first got that passion for what you wanted to do and education and those types of things. How about music? Where did you get, because you multiple music degrees in music, where did you get your love or your interest in music from?
Well, that's right at mom. That's my mother. She was a vocalist. And as a matter of fact, was getting ready to go to DePaul when World War II took off, and she enlisted in the Army and never finished college. And of course, then met my dad. But all of my growing up years, she taught piano lessons. She conducted in church choirs, any student who was going into a pageant, she coached them on, you know, so there was always arts opportunities in our family. And all three, you know, my brother, my sister, and I all dabbled a bit in our music interests. But for me, it was a natural to go off to college. When, once again, being a first gen, that impact from my family upbringing was really important to me. And I loved being engaged in music. But back to arriving at Indiana State, because that's how I got here. I came to teach music at the lab school.
Oh,
when
wow,
we
okay.
still had one, and told the director, Jim Rentschler, wonderful, wonderful educator who is now passed. But he said to me, well, Deborah, if this is what you love doing, having college students in your classroom, we've got this PhD program you ought to look into. And that's where it took off
wow.
for me.
Wow. So a lot of connections. You really did a coming home of sorts. You had a lot of connections back to Terre Haute and it brought you home. Deborah, as you look to the future, and you've talked a little bit about it here, but where would you like to see Indiana State University in? Let's look into the crystal ball and the future, you know, beyond 5 years, say 10 plus years from now. Where do you see the university, and where does it fit in with the rest of this higher education system in the state of Indiana?
Well, Indiana is really rich in its opportunities as well. Many states have one flagship institution, and our one, we have two. Then we have that wonderful Notre Dame campus, which is nationally known throughout the country. I don't believe a lot of people realize Notre Dame and Purdue are in the same state. They mm-hmm. do know IU is here, and they do know Indiana State yeah. is, because we've got it in our name. But I would really think in the next 10 to 15 years for Indiana State, the rest of the state begins to learn the role we fill here. And it was back to some of my earlier comments that we predominantly serve this state's population. And that's really important, because there's so much opportunity to grow the diversity of a workforce in this state. You know, our second largest enrollment geographic spot is Marion County. A lot of people don't realize that we're a 1/3 diverse student campus. And when people come from not much opportunity for some of them, and they graduate with all this opportunity, it fuels our ability to create a more diverse workforce, partnered with the big cousins who will import talent, and we should all be working together to keep more of that talent here in Indiana. So I would like to see that. I believe Indiana State will take its role in a very critical part in that machine, if you will, that will chart the future for talent development in Indiana.
Yeah, I should mention, I think it's interesting because as I recall, I believe it was Lilly Endowment provided you with some funds to really get at that reducing the achievement gap in completion rates for at-risk students, students of color on campus, right?
And that is indeed who we serve. Yes, indeed. We're delighted to receive that Charting the Future of Higher Ed grant from the Lilly Endowment. And what our focus in that is on, we already bring many of that demographic of students to campus. It's to reduce the graduation gap. We redefine the word success here is one thing, graduating. It's not coming in the door. It's not getting a chance. It's not giving them a second. It's really creating a structure and environment around these students that guides them towards achieving that degree. That's the only point at which it makes sense for someone to engage in this work. Nationally, and we've got a challenge as well, Gary, the enrollment in higher ed is now tipped stronger to female than males. We cannot lose those college-going males in this country if we are going to achieve to the level that we should be as a global power. So, and it's not unlike that here. We're about 57% female, our campus, and we need to not only grow that amount of students, male students who are attending, but also reduce the achievement gap. And it's the completion rate is what we're focused on.
Dr. Deborah Curtis, the 12th president at Indiana State University. President Curtis, been a real treat talking to you today. You obviously have a passion for education, but also a passion for Indiana State and what it can be. And I think it's well on its way to achieving much success. So thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Gary, thanks for having me. And I want to reiterate how very proud we are of you being a Sycamore and all the great things you've accomplished. Thanks for being our calling card.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for joining us on this edition of the Business and Beyond podcast presented by PNC. It is a weekly conversation with achievers in business, sports, entertainment, and beyond. And you can catch all of our episodes and Indiana Business News 24/7. All you have to do is go to insideindianabusiness.com. I'm Gary Dick. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.